Assembly Audible podcast is sponsored by Zimmer Group, supplier of high-quality automation components for robotic handling and manufacturing. Hello, and welcome to Assembly Audible. I'm your host, Jennifer Pierce, multimedia editor with Assembly Magazine. Indeed, everyone is talking about how automation and robotics can improve the efficiency and the economic scope of assembly, as well as improve the ergonomics of the operators' work on assembly lines. Today, we're speaking with Allison Seward, Executive Director of Manufacturing Quality for GE Appliances, about her cutting-edge work over the past 20 years. In spring 2023, the Manufacturing Institute, the workforce development and education partner of the National Association of Manufacturers, recognized Allison as a 2023 Women Make Awards honoree. Allison, thank you for your time today. And of course, welcome to Assembly Audible.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer. Happy to be here today.
Okay. So first of all, congratulations on receiving the Manufacturing Institute's 2023 Women Make Award. Please tell us to start with a little bit about your background and your current role.
Great. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. It was great to be a part of that award ceremony with 99 other women. It was wonderful. So my background, I am actually an engineer by degree. I'm a mechanical engineer, and I started my co-ops here at GE Appliances while I was still finishing my degree, and came up through the organization in a lot of different roles. I've been in materials, plant operations, supplier quality, even spent a lot of time in product design and program management. And then as I moved into leadership positions, I had roles as a design manager, a program manager, leading cost out in new product execution, as well as some work in design quality. So my two most recent roles, I was the leader for an $80 million investment in our kitchen cleanup business, which I think we'll talk a lot about today.
Yes.
Of how we were able to use some of the new processes in automation and robotics. But currently, I lead our manufacturing quality organization, and my team has business-wide responsibility for all aspects of quality at any facility in the U.S. that makes our products.
Okay, fantastic. Yes, definitely. Can you tell our listeners about the kitchen cleanup program at GEA? There's a couple of questions as part of this whole question. I guess, first of all, tell us a little bit about the program and how you incorporated automation and robotics into the dishwashing line.
Yes, so this was an $80 million investment that was a brand new dishwasher line from both a product and a process standpoint. Added on top of the size of that investment, we launched in the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. We actually launched in the fall of 2020. So we created an entirely new product architecture, utilizing a lot of design for manufacturing and assembly principles to create the product and the process together. So a big piece of how we were able to do this was actually immersing our team in the factory to understand what were the current challenges of the frontline workers. We really wanted the product to be wonderful for our end consumers, but also be easy to build for the people putting it together every day.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So what that looked like is we actually took the entire team and assigned them jobs in the factory for them to go and work for a day. We did it fairly strategically. We had some of our equipment designers on some of those jobs that were typically known to be the most challenging or the most difficult from an ergonomic standpoint. And we did that believing that if they did the job and had that experience, they would have some new ideas on how to make it better. And that's really what happened. So we were able to take a lot of the learnings from that immersion and figure out creative ways to apply robotics and automation to improve the ergonomics. As we all know, it ends up improving everything. It's better for the workers' experience, but it also creates a better product. You're less likely to have quality defects or delays in production if we solve those issues for the operator.
Wow, that's really genius. So I'm just curious, what were some of the challenges that they were facing?
So we had some of the assemblies that were almost blind assembly for the operator, where they were placing a component in and having to reach without line of sight to lock a component in place. And we actually were able to automate that entire process on the new assembly line. So it ended up improving the ergonomics completely by not having that blind assembly, but again, also improved the quality because we were able to get a consistent assembly every single time.
So I heard you mention, and I of course read the number in the release about the economic or revenue, the benefits there, right? So can you explain to me though, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that that was the profit, or, you know, I read that and it's like, okay, I understand it's a large number, but what does that mean for your company and for what you developed?
So I would say our development of this product and process together helped us kind of achieve two key metrics. We were able to hit the cost target for the product itself. So the cost for us to create it, we were able to hit those targets.
Okay.
But also, we were able to create a product that is really what our customers wanted. So that helped us on the revenue side as well. So we were really able to sell the product very well. It's doing very well out in the marketplace. And really we're able to deliver on both sides of the equation, something our customers wanted, produced at a cost position that was very competitive.
That's so inspiring. And I've never heard anybody talk about having a better assembly line and a more efficient, you know, safe assembly line, making a better product. But I mean, that makes a ton of sense.
Yes, absolutely. If you struggle to put something together, you're not going to be able to do it right every time. So how can we set up our frontline workers for success so that they're able to do things correctly the first time? Our tagline was always make it easier to do it right than it is to do it wrong. And if you have that focus with that individual operator perspective, you end up arriving at a solution that's better for them and for the product.
That's fantastic. Okay. Would you mind to tell us about how your team leveraged lean product and process development to successfully launch the new dishwasher?
Yes, absolutely. So you've heard me say it probably a couple of times already. Hitting both of those pieces with product and process is really critical. So typical work function would be to have our functional silos do their work and then pass it on to the next group. So for example, design engineering works on drawings, figures out what the product is going to be, and then they would hand that off to the quality and the manufacturing teams and say, figure out how to make this and how to check this. So that process can function, but there ends up being a lot of rework and moving things backwards in the process. So we really focused on synchronizing our value streams. That's one of the key tenets of the LPPD approach. So we really structured the entire team around a collaborative environment. So our teams had a design engineer, an equipment engineer, and a quality engineer, as well as a team leader from the operations group that were engaged. And they could have trade-off discussions during the entire process and talk about if design wants to assemble this with this one clip and this one screw, what does that mean for assembly and what does that mean for quality? And they could have that real-time dialogue and discussion and make adjustments and improvements all along the way. So really having a collaborative approach across all of the different functions. So that was a key backbone of how we did our work. And then we had a few practices that really helped us with that. We did have an Obeya room. I don't know if you're familiar with Obeyas. It's basically like a war room where the entire program team has access to it and all of the critical information is literally posted on the walls.
Wow.
So we had factory layout drawings. We had a fully detailed schedule wall that I referred to as our visual to-do list. I'm one of those people who likes to have my to-do list for the week and check things off as they get done. And we executed that on a program level. So the entire team could see the critical activities that had to happen in the next 12 weeks or so. And then we also had a daily stand-up meeting in that space where we talked about what were the most critical things to get accomplished throughout that week and what maybe was upcoming on that schedule wall. And then the last practice that we incorporated that was very helpful was a decision flow mapping. I find in product development, we can be good at getting things done, but are we really keyed into the decisions that need to be made in order for people to get their work done? So we also had a process that mapped out all of the upcoming decisions, and we understood where those interacted across the teams and knew what the timing was to make a decision. So we could rally people around getting the information we needed in order to make a strong decision.
That's amazing. What a visionary approach, literally, I guess, as well. I love, that is exciting and also approachable for people like me who aren't, trained or, I would love to see that, and just see the large picture. And I could imagine that everybody on the team can get excited about, seeing where they fit in and becoming a part of the whole strategy.
Yes, that's a huge benefit of the Obeya. The other piece with it is our program leadership team actually had our desks in the Obeya. Mm-hmm. So team members would come in and we're looking at the information on the walls, maybe trying to understand how their piece fit in. They mm-hmm. could very easily grab somebody on the leadership team and have some real-time coaching and mentoring right in the moment mm-hmm. about what they were doing and how it fit into that bigger picture. And it was always the first place we took people new to the program. They would come into the Obeya and just read the walls and walk around and get immersed in what was happening.
That is so cool. I would love to see that. And I can definitely see and understand now just from talking to you why you received an award. And I'm just curious, is this approach is, I mean, I know you led this, right? So is your approach, do you think that this is cutting edge, not to put you on the spot, or do you think that what you've developed is like, a leader, a great example of how people should model things from what you did? I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say that I've been heavily influenced by a lot of people who've done good work ahead of me as well. Mm-hmm. So we have a great history of successful product launches in our business. So we've been able to learn from each subsequent product launch and take the things that worked very well and then bring them into the next program. So we've done that for a few decades now of going back through and really learning from each program and helping to make the next one better. But we've also been open to influences outside of our company. So we've done some work with the Lean Enterprise Institute, and they really champion this LPPD approach. And so we're very open to this innovation in product development and learning from outside the company as well, and taking some of those best practices and fitting them in with what we do well in order to make it even better outcomes for the business.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing your insight. That was really interesting for me. I read a quote in the release that I was really interested in, and it's a quote from the Manufacturing Institute president, Carolyn Lee. And she said, "The biggest challenge facing manufacturers continues to be the growing workforce crisis, and women are the industry's largest talent opportunity. Bringing just 6% more women into manufacturing would fill all open jobs in the sector today." So I just kind of wanted to, hear your thoughts on that. And do you have any stats or anything that you could share with our audience about that percentage?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a huge reason why I'm so honored to be part of the Women Make Awards, because of their focus in this space. So right now, women make up about 29% of the manufacturing workforce. And that is from surveys done by the National Association of Manufacturers. And recognizing that there is a talent shortage in manufacturing across all types of industries, there is a recognition that bringing more women into this space will fill that talent gap that we all struggle with as we're looking to fill roles. So they've actually created an initiative. It's called the 35 by 30. So we have a goal to increase women's representation to 35%. So that's the 6 points improvement there that was in the quote by the year 2030. So in the next 7 years, move that needle, that 6 percentage points up to 35%.
Fantastic.
So specifically at GEA, we also have goals that are also tied to our executive compensation. It's great to have a goal. It's even better to tie it to something that has strong influence for our workforce. So our leading goal is to be 40% women and also 40% people of color by 2025. So we still have work to do, but we are making progress in that direction and are very proud to have that out there publicly as the leading goal that we're going after.
That's great. That's really, really wonderful. So, so what do you think needs to happen to make these changes to bring more women into engineering and manufacturing?
Yeah, it's a great question. And if there was one solution, I think we all would have grabbed it by now and be running with it.
Yeah.
I think it's really going to be across several different areas. So I'll talk about just a couple of them. The first, I think, is education of with younger girls, especially letting them understand what opportunities are out there for them. So we've done this in a couple of ways. I actually launched with a grant I received about 8 years ago, a Women in Engineering Leadership Conference here at the University of Louisville. It's my alma mater. It's here in the city where our company is. And so they actually host a conference every year for the female engineering students, helping them understand what it means to be successful in these typically male-dominated fields. It's a wonderful conference. I was just there this year speaking on that topic, how to succeed in a male-dominated field. And they give great insights to the students and help set them up to know what to expect as they transition into the workforce. But as a company, we're also focused farther down, even before you get into college. So we've invested more than $2.5 million in education and nonprofit organizations. And one of those is also here in Louisville. It's the Grace James Academy, and it's actually an all-girls STEAM academy. And we've got great partnerships with them. We actually helped build their STEAM lab, and we have employees that participate in mentorship opportunities. We have the students out to our facility just to let them see what is out there, because you can't be what you can't see. If you don't know it's out there, then you can't actually go after it.
It's so true.
Yeah. So education is a huge piece, just letting them know it's an opportunity. The second piece I would say is once women have made the choice to head into this field, we've got to provide them good support and good mentorship. So that's something we do very well here at GEA with formal and informal mentoring programs. And I would say all of us in manufacturing leadership take this seriously and have many, many mentors and mentees as well, either formal or informal, that we're encouraging on this journey. And then also for us, we recognize that the workforce is changing and flexibility is a bigger need. And we see that for a lot of people, but especially for women. So a couple of programs we've created here, we have what we call the GEA 2-day and GEA 3-day here at our Louisville campus. And they were originally created with students in mind. So the way they're set up is that an individual can work on Mondays and Fridays, or they can work Tuesday through Thursday, with the original thought being they can be in school and classes on the other days. But what we're finding is that this is actually very popular with women, with single parents, and it's tapped into a whole nother workforce, even outside of what we were thinking. So we've seen great success with that. And we have some similar programs at our other facilities. At our cooking facility in Lafayette, Georgia, we have a program called My Work Choice that is even more flexible. You can sign in to work whatever you want to work and are able to work as little as one shift a month. You can come in and say that that's what you're able to
Wow.
work. So that's been very popular as well.
That is so cool.
And then the last piece I would just say around the support is companies have to provide that support for people that are coming into this industry. We do that with a very robust set of employee resource groups here at GEA, and we have them in many different areas. But I lead a portion of our Empower Women's ERG that is focused on what we call today's families. And we really look at supporting working parents as well as supporting our colleagues who are caring for aging parents. And we have some people who fall into both categories, that sandwich generation, where they're caring for kids in their own home, and then they're also caring for parents who are aging. So we find having resources and support for those employee groups helps keep them in our industry and still supporting the needs that they have at home.
Fantastic. I feel like this is assembly excellence.
Yeah.
For sure. In just every area, I'm super impressed.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot to really move that needle from the 29% to the 35%. And I think things that you're doing here of continuing to talk to people and get more ideas out there is helpful. We're always looking for more ideas as well. What's working in other places or other industries that we can bring in and help grow this pipeline. And once we get them here, keep them here, keep them in manufacturing. I love being in manufacturing. We want to get them in here and keep them interested.
That's fantastic. It has been so wonderful speaking with you. Is there anything that you would like to add before we close today?
Now, again, I think it's great the discussions that you're having on here, and just appreciate the time to share our perspective. And just thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for making time. It was an enlightening conversation. I learned so much. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
For more insights on assembling discrete parts into finished products and the people behind it all, visit our website, assemblymag.com, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast to keep up with our latest episodes. We're also on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, so we invite you to follow us there too. This has been Assembly Audible. Thanks for listening.